I love doing shows where you, my colleague, can walk away with concrete steps to use in making immediate incremental improvements. The only thing better than those shows are the ones offering a transformative shift in perspective, where you can see an issue or topic from a radically different point of view that changes how you perceive and think. Today, you'll get both some practical steps to begin taking and a transformative shift in perspective. Today, we're diving into supporting students and their families who are English learners. Hello, colleagues, and welcome to the Assistant Principal Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Frederick Buskey. We're all on a leadership journey. Every day, we have a chance to grow. Every day, we have a chance to help others grow. My goal and the goal of this podcast is to help you grow into being a strategic leader, a leader who puts people before purpose, who solves problems instead of treating symptoms, and who understands the difference between progress and action. Through this podcast, my daily email, and virtual programs, I'm working to build a network of inspired and inspiring school leaders. Let's get started on today's adventure and this unique opportunity to learn to live and lead better. Andrea Bittner is an educator, author, and speaker. She lives in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and has worked with students in grades K through 12 and from all over the world throughout her 22 years in public education. Her first book, Take Me Home, was published by Austin Macaulay in July of 2021. Take Me Home is a true story of 11 of her former EL students who give firsthand accounts of what it's really like to become bilingual in America. She's also the co-author of Chip Baker's The Impact of Influence, Volume 3, and Dr. Rick Jader's 100 No-Nonsense Things All School Leaders Should Stop Doing. She teaches EL daily and travels the country speaking and teaching educators how to teach and reach EL students and effectively communicate with EL families. Good morning, Andrea. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's taken us a little while to get here. We've had some cancellations and postponements, but I'm so glad that you're here today. I always like to start with celebrations. So what is Andrea celebrating today?
You know, personally, I'm celebrating some great weather here in Philadelphia because we are finally hitting the mid 50s, which for us in winter is almost break out your t-shirt kind of weather. And so we are celebrating that. In addition to that, celebrating some things professionally, been doing some great work around the country with schools and districts and back in school myself to learn some more about social emotional learning. So lots of great stuff happening.
Oh, that's awesome. And we have listeners from all over the United States, all over the world. And so people need to understand what that means. Good weather in Philadelphia. And we're recording this in the first week of February. And I just recorded an episode yesterday with Jason McKenna, who I think his episode will follow yours in a week or so. He's in Pittsburgh and he said the exact, oh, weather is great in Pittsburgh today. So everybody that doesn't live in Philadelphia that's listening to us know we had two guests in consecutive days rave about the weather in Pennsylvania. And so, yeah, it's usually cold and nasty. It's the first glimpse of spring and we can all kind of draw hope from that, but not too much hope.
So true. It's the days that like this, where it's just spring is kind of knocking, reminding us that it's just around the corner. And so with the sunny skies that have been met with a lot of dreariness the past few weeks, I agree with Jason. This is the best week we've had so far.
Awesome. Andrea, is there a story that will let listeners understand why you're doing the work that you're doing?
Yes. So over a decade ago, I was working with some English language learners at the high school level, and I had about 40 different students with about 25 different languages, and they came from all walks of life. I had students who were born here. I had students who had crossed the border. I had students who had waited 10 years for a visa and came after their parents. I had students who had waited 10 years for a visa and came before their parents. I had students that were exchange students, and I had students who were adopted. And so we had this plethora of English learners from all around the world who were in our classroom and in our EL program. And so I was teaching at the high school level at the time. And every day our students were greeted with this huge classroom banner. And the banner said, "Education is opportunity. Education is freedom. What's your plan?" Because you see, our kids knew their only plan couldn't be, "I'm not going to be successful here in this new school." Or their own plan, only plan couldn't be, "I'm going to go back to my country right now," or "I'm going to go back to the state I just came from," or the district down the street. Because we had reminded them often that your parents and teachers have worked too hard to give you the opportunity to become bilingual. And so in the time that we have with you, whether you arrived in this high school as a freshman or a junior or a senior, we are going to make a plan. And what would happen with this mentality is that every year our seniors would have this special day we called Alumni Day, T-shirt day, where our alumni, who are now young bilingual professionals out and working in the world, would come back and they would bring our seniors a T-shirt. And on that T-shirt, it would say wherever they were headed next. We didn't care if it was entrepreneur, YouTuber, local university, community college, a trade, the workforce, whatever it was, our alumni were there to celebrate with them, congratulate them for finishing this chapter of their life's plan, and tell them about the amazing opportunities that were waiting for them because they were now young bilingual professionals themselves. And so it was during this time that I worked with one particular family, the Lopez family, and I taught all seven of their children. It was all boys and one girl. And they happened to be from the country of Salvador. And I had met with this family and taught all of them over the years. And I've been to Salvador myself 3 times to do some work with some schools down there. And so I knew the aunts, the uncles, the cousins, everybody. And so we had Sergio to Jeffrey from Las Vegas, all the way down to Nancy, who was the youngest and only female in the family. And so about a year after all of those students over time had gone through our What's Your Plan program, I was teaching outside in a school next door, and there was a bunch of helicopters outside. And I thought, wow, I hope everything's okay. There's a lot of helicopters outside today. And about an hour after I had that thought, my principal came down to get me to let me know that one of my students had been hit by the train. And unfortunately, that student was Nancy. And unfortunately, she passed away that day. You see, she had a pair of headphones on, and she, when we watched the video later with mom and dad, we saw she made a decision to walk along the inside of the tracks, and she didn't hear the Acela, and the Acela came and clipped her from behind. And so at that time, this caused a huge trauma in our community, with our students, with our teachers, with Nancy's parents. And one of the most troubling parts of that day was that mom and dad were still learning English themselves. And so when they got the call that something had happened to one of those children, no one on the local force spoke Spanish. And so they could kind of put together that something was wrong, and they could kind of put together that something had happened to one of the kids, but they didn't know which one it was. And so they went up to those tracks for hours. And they stood there trying to navigate all of these pieces, including the language barrier, to figure out what went wrong. And so in those coming weeks, we navigated a ton. We navigated working with mom and dad and burying their daughter and the funeral process and the language barrier. We navigated the immigration process, trying to get her brother to be able to be allowed to come up and bury his sister, which he was denied. We worked with the local school to provide support for all the students that I taught. We worked with the Latino community who came to sit with mom and dad every night for weeks while we kind of went through this experience. And so at the time, one of my jobs was to speak at her funeral. And so I went to the funeral and I wrote a short poem at the time, and I called it Take Me Home. And it was an homage to Nancy's story of coming into the US. And so at the time I read that poem at that funeral, and I continued to teach these amazing kids. And for a while, that piece of paper with that poem on it sat out on my desk. And a few months later, I looked at it and I thought, well, maybe somebody could be helped by part of this story. Maybe something about it would open their eyes to the experiences of our English learners. And so I sent that piece of paper out on a whim. And a few months later, this publisher gets back to me and they're like, hey, Andrea, we really like your poem, but we don't want you to write a poem. We want you to write a book. And we're going to give you 6 months to do it. And if you come back with something we like, we're going to take you on and publish it. And I started to think to myself, well, I don't just want to tell her story. I want to tell all their stories because they're so very different. And a lot of people in my 24 years of experience have made assumptions that an English language learner's experiences are the same. For example, kids that I would receive that would move here from Africa would come into my classroom and go, Miss B, why are people asking me if I lived with lions? I never lived with lions. I went to a private boarding school in the city. Or other kids would come in and they would say, everybody thinks I'm from Mexico. I'm not from Mexico. I'm from Ecuador. People in Mexico. Or other kids would come in and say, I'm practicing my religion in the building, but nobody seems to understand what it means when I want to wear certain clothing attire, and a lot of mean things are being said to me. And so, with all of these things in mind and this experience that we had, I saw an opportunity to start to try to change the narrative about how students view our English learners and show the true diversity that exists among them. So, I went back and I found 11 of my former English learners who are now in their late 20s, early 30s. And I said to them, now that you are young bilingual professionals out working in the world and you can reflect back upon your school experience, what was that really like for you? And so, from every conversation I had, we tell the story in the first person through their eyes. We change their names to names of strength, like fuel and grit and surge and more. And we weave Nancy's story through it. I was able to also go back and interview her parents to gauge her perspective on coming to school in the US. And we also thought it was really important to include the perspective of someone who was born here, because nowadays, most English language learners are, and those numbers are on the rise fast and furiously throughout the country. And so, with all of those ideas together, we created Take Me Home, the true story of 11 of our students who give an inspiring account of what it was really like to become bilingual in America. And that's my long-winded version.
So, Andrew, we had talked before we turned the recording on about looking at this as three parts of helping assistant principals kind of gain that understanding that they think is so critical, and then a little bit about what they need to know, and then what do you do with that? I want to really focus on the understanding piece. And if we get to those other two pieces, that's great. But I think there's so much to unpack because this is such a diverse topic and so complex in so many ways. So I guess the first thing, if I'm an assistant principal and I'm on my way into work listening to this podcast, and so now you have me thinking about this wide range, this diversity, the assumptions maybe I make about where people came from. I guess let's start with some of the most common assumptions, I guess, that you've encountered from other students, from school leaders, from teachers. Let's think about those assumptions and then how those assumptions impact students.
Absolutely. I mean, I think based on the conversations that I've had with these students who I still am in contact with today, one of the first messages they thought that was really important for our schools to hear and our assistant principals to explore is that lack of language never equals lack of intelligence. And a lot of times they either experienced or watched their family members experience being treated in that way. And so, for example, I had a student named Christopher, and when he came into the middle school level, he was placed into his content science class. And when his teacher asked him what he knew about ants, he could write three words: ants can move. And that was it. Because at the time, that was the vocabulary that he had. He was a newcomer, a level, very, very entry level beginning student. When we gave Christopher a performance-based task to show what he knew about ants, and I show this when I talk to schools in a visual, he drew an entire page of tunnels and sand and ants and what they were eating and the concept that he could display that he understood with that alternate assessment showed much more knowledge than what he could say at the time. And so lack of language, we show that example for that reason, never equals lack of intelligence. They just might not know the word for it yet. And so that piece was important. I think the second piece that was important is that when you meet someone who's learning English for the first time, treat that time period of their life as an asset and not a handicap. Because being an English learner is not a condition. It's not a transition. It's an expansion. It's an expansion of skills. So as administrators and teachers and all stakeholders in the school community, it's our job to start to gather what I call the movie and not the snapshot of those students' abilities so we can learn how to best plan to expand them.
I want to really emphasize that. I think some of the best shows that we do have this moment or this nugget that is beyond the technical of this is what I need to do. And it is about making a pivot in our perspectives and how we view things. And so, like, I'm tempted to just say, okay, this has been great, Andrea, let's end it right here. Because this idea of looking, it's easy to say, well, it's an asset, not a handicap, but that it is an expansion. I find that absolutely beautiful. And so I really want to draw listeners' attention to that, to invite you to shift your perspective. And when people come in with a wonderful asset, which is being able to speak a language other than English, and when they come into the school, I love this idea. We're not fixing something, we're expanding on something else. And what a powerful way to flip this narrative. And the thing about changing our perspectives is it changes our language and our actions in ways that we may not always be conscious of. So as long as we can advocate for ELs and do everything right, but as long as we have that mindset of we're fixing them, that is going to creep into the small ways we make decisions, the assumptions we make, and the language that we use, and probably the way we treat families. But if I can flip my narrative as a leader to this is an expansion, this is continued, this is growth for someone, it just changes the way you think and approach and probably improves the way you engage with families.
It really does. And you know, our families are trusting us to lead their child through what very well could be the most challenging chapter of their life. And so we take that opportunity very seriously. And at the same time, I also want to emphasize the importance of accessing and discussing and touching base with your families. And there are some great practical tools out there to do that. There are things like Talking Points, which is a free web-based app that our teachers and administrators use to send messages to parents that go directly to their phones in their preferred language. And when they respond in their preferred language, it comes right back to you. There are other apps like Say Hi that you can use on the fly for verbal communication. We in my district use language-based services, a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week, with live interpreters available over 163 different languages that we have access to immediately to contact parents. You know, the parents, I always say, are the root to the children. And in order to get the most information about our kids, we have to talk to the people that they reside with. And so it's really important when an EL first comes into your school to have that, what we call family interview with parents. And it goes a little bit something like this. We'll send home, after that home language survey indicates there's a language other than English spoken at home, we send home a Google Doc via email that's translatable, because some of our parents prefer languages other than English. And let me add to that before I jump into this example by sharing, that you shouldn't make the assumption that all your parents who are bilingual or more don't prefer English, because some of them do. And so you want to have that conversation with parents from the very beginning. And this is how we do it. We say, hey, I've been notified in our school system that your student is a bilingual English language learner, or an EL, however you want to label it in your state. I think that's amazing. Thank you so much for giving them that gift. I'd love to learn more about what language you would prefer school communication to come home in. Please let me know and fill out the attached questionnaire. And then that questionnaire dives in more into, well, yes, you've checked off that box on the home language survey, but what does language really look like in your home? Are you gifting your children with the ability to become bilingual and they're fluent in Arabic and they speak it with you daily? Or do they just hear you and dad speak it, but they've always been educated here in the US and you didn't teach it to them yet? Or do you have grandparents they maybe travel with in the summer to go visit? Or did you just check off the box wrong? And so you want to really push more for that movie, I say, than the snapshot of that little box they checked off on a document for registration. Because what does language look like in your home? And our parents respond. And they respond to that Google Doc. And they respond to those talking point messages because they do have questions and information that they want to engage with the school.
So I'm curious about, we're kind of moving into this realm now of how do we support families? How did these different support elements grow up in your school? Because y'all didn't start this way. So talk to me about the evolution of how your school has served EL families.
When we work with our EL families, we have a couple things in place that have been very successful, and they take a lot of teamwork, and they happen over time. And some of the things that we have instituted over time are a couple opportunities. The first one is family engagement. When I think about family engagement, I always think about the four F's: food, free, family, and fun. And you want to make sure that the event is free. You want to make sure that they can bring any member of the family to the event. No childcare is required. You want to make sure you implement some type of food. We've done things that started small, like pizza on the playground, where we invite the families out to the playground. We've got pizza there. Some of our older EL students will help monitor that playground. And now we've got access to moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas. And we have tables out with resources, or we take them into the cafeteria for a few minutes and do a short presentation about our program, or we answer questions. And we've got lots of alumni there who are also bilingual and willing to support. And so, or we have our apps on our phones, right? So there are lots of different ways to communicate with families, but you want to make the school place a place they can not only connect with teachers, but connect with each other. Because a lot of families, oh, I didn't know you also speak Russian and you live down the street. Oh, you speak Mandarin too? And there's nothing more satisfying than seeing these parents and families, younger kids, older kids, et cetera, engage with each other. So you want to give them a place. And most families, they may not be able to get everywhere in the community, but they can always get to your school. And so we provide that transportation for them if they request it, to get them to school. If it's like one school for the district, that's our host school for that event. We also think about engaging with families, having conversations with them in languages they prefer. You know, our main office has a language preference list so that they know when Mrs. Vo comes into the building, she prefers Vietnamese. And they already have the tools to be proactive rather than reactive when parents are coming in. So we have those tools available as well. We also think about communication with our parents on more of a monthly or weekly basis. We utilize platforms that have translatable options. For example, we use S'more. That is a great weekly newsletter that our principal puts out, and it has a translatable function at the top if they want to use it. And so you want to be thinking about the best way to communicate with your families to gauge the most information from them. We also, over time, learned not to put them in situations where they may not be comfortable. And what I mean by that is I highly discourage having a student translate for their parents. I highly discourage having a sibling of that student translate for their parents. I also want to encourage people not to go grab that teacher down the hall and pull her out of class because you know she also speaks Spanish. Or to make the family bring a neighbor. And when say people say, well, why, Andrea? I mean, I just want to talk to the parents. They should be able to get this information. I say, there is nothing more disempowering as a parent than not being able to speak to your children's teachers in a comfortable setting in the language you prefer. Because maybe there are things you don't want your children to know about you that you need to be able to communicate with them about. Or maybe you don't want their siblings to know about their brother or sister. Students are not hired interpreters. Let students be students. And so keeping all those things in mind, I think over time, to answer your question, we have put all these things in place to create a platform where our families feel engaged and safe.
Okay, so I think in a couple minutes, we're going to need to come back to the technology piece. You've thrown out some examples, and I think when we go to wrap this up, let's actually go through some of those technology tools, and so people have those thoughts and can look into that stuff. Before we do that, what's the kind of relationship between the EL teacher, the general classroom teacher, and the admin? Because this obviously takes some coordination and some teamwork. So what are some ways that you've seen this kind of partnership between the school people work well?
In our district, I'm proud to say it's all hands on deck. And the reason I say that is because as the EL teacher who works between two different buildings, we work with hundreds of students and our team. Most of our student and family experiences with educators and administrators will happen outside of the EL classroom. And so we want those experiences to be successful for them. And so what I mean by that is, if you think about it, everybody in the building should know who your English learners are. They're going to interact with the cafeteria team, with the maintenance team, with the transportation team, with the bus drivers, with the office team, with your social workers, with your guidance counselors. Think about it. Their realm of all of the conversations they experience during the day are mostly outside of the EL classroom. And so with that in mind, we have to start to become more proactive and less reactive. And how we do that is we team up. And so when we receive an EL into our building, one of the first things that I'm doing as the EL teacher is making sure that our teachers and everybody who will interact with them know who they are, what their language proficiency level is, what languages that they're preferring, and what kind of supports they're going to need and accommodations inside the classroom. So our district has been very supportive about intentionally putting aside collaboration time for your EL teacher and your content area teacher. It can't be haphazardly done. It can't be a one and done once a year. It needs to be intentional meetings, not talking about hours and hours in a day, talking about 30-minute meeting where we can sit down and provide all the background of that student and their family so that everybody is informed. From there, we start to model accommodations that can occur in the classrooms, and we revisit that meeting probably every 4 to 6 weeks officially, but in between, teachers are always reaching out to see how it's going. Because you have to remember that the accommodations that you put in place are not an end-all be-all for the entire life of the English language learner student. They're going to fade over time as they become more proficient at this new language.
So I've got new teachers in my building, or I've got teachers that are really unfamiliar with working with EL kids. And we're talking about accommodations. How do you help teachers develop those skills given the packed, crazy environment that we're working in? How do you find that time and create the opportunities and then support those teachers?
You know, it's a lot of conversation and model. You know, being willing to go into those teachers' classrooms, work with the curriculum that they currently have, encourage them to contact their curriculum directors to find out what EL accommodations are already built into their curriculum. Because nowadays, most of them have some. And so with all of the, you know, mandates and laws about accommodations that are required for our English learners, curriculums are now encompassing components that are specific to accommodating ELs. So I would be asking your curriculum directors, teaming up with your EL teacher, let her or him come in and model some of the strategies that could work. Think about your scheduling and what that could look like for your English language learner students. In our district in particular, we are available to give our students credit at the high school level for their EL classes. We have EL 1-2, EL Level 3, EL Level 4, and in addition to that, we created a class called Spanish for Native Speakers, where we had a pocket of students who were English learners who had fluently spoken Spanish because they were gifted it by their parents their whole life, but never learned the literacy behind it. But here's what our teacher did. She said, I'm going to give you an opportunity to take a test to become a certified translator. So by the time you walk out of high school, if you would like to use this opportunity, you can. And if you don't, it's okay. But the motivation behind it was to complete that coursework for that reason. And so I really think that, to answer your question, conversation, modeling, follow-up is really important to establish that connection.
Okay. All right. Well, let's dive into some of that technology then. You mentioned, I think, apps called Talking Points, Say Hi, Language Based. I can't read my own notes.
Yes, let's say language-based services, yes.
Yeah, okay. So talk to us about some of the, maybe four of the top technology things that people should look into.
You know, I think that for communication purposes, things like Say Hi, Talking Points, language-based services are wonderful. Propio One is an additional service that students can use with conferences. We use them with families for Zoom. So it's nice because they provide a live interpreter on the Zoom. They also provide written documentation as well if you need some type of documentation for translation services. So we also utilize Propio One. I think that they're probably wonderful in terms of communication with parents and families. AI is a hot topic right now in education. And there are some great apps out there that our teachers are using to help them differentiate and accommodate their assignments. Three in particular that I've experienced are DiffIt, D-I-F-F-I-T, which allows teachers the opportunity to copy and paste in information and then put in some parameters of how they would like it to be accommodated for an English learner or any student literacy for that matter. And it will pump out what you need to use for your lesson. So you could play around with DiffIt. There are also two or three others, Text Compactor and Rewordify, are two additional technology resources that our teachers use to accommodate language for students, especially in the very beginning, that are learning. In addition to, let me think, the other one I wanted to share, YouTube Caption Summarizer. So if you have YouTube and you are, for example, a teacher called me a few weeks ago and said, I have to teach Hatchet to my sixth grade student. She's from the Ukraine. She's a newcomer. But the good news is she's literate in her first language. See, that's a win-win. And that's something you dive into when you're, you know, really navigating the background of your student. Are they literate in their first language? Because if they are, acquiring English is going to be easier for them because they have roots to grab onto. Now they're just learning the differences. When you have students who come in who are what we call SLIFE, or never formally educated or interrupted formal education students, those are students that have gaps maybe in their learning at times. And now I've got to teach that same middle school student who's not literate in their first language how to read. And so see the differentiator there. So with all of that in mind, YouTube offers this captioning feature where if you go into captions, you can choose the language you prefer. Student can watch the video. They will be hearing it in English, but they will be reading it across the bottom of the screen in their first language. And so it's another added layer of support that teachers can use to help support students. YouTube also has YouTube Summarizer, which after a student watches a video, it will give you a small short text of what that video was about. And so there are so many ways, you know, besides Google Translate that many people have come to use at times. But translation is not the only accommodation or an accommodation for an English learner. It's a support, but there are a lot of things out there like those things I mentioned that are great for kids.
So as an administrator, what do I really need to be aware of in supporting my EL teacher?
Your EL teacher is best supported when he or she has the opportunity to A, have a daily classroom space to work, because a lot of our EL teachers are teaching in hallways, they're teaching in offices, they're getting kicked out of conference rooms. There's an inconsistency in the building, not only for the teacher, but for those students, about where that support is all day long. You also want to be thinking about the curriculum that you're providing for your EL students. You want to be engaged and supportive of the curriculum that your teacher is requesting to use for those students, because not everybody across the country has them. The third thing you want to think about is, how are you giving your EL teacher intentional time to effectively collaborate with your content teachers? And the fourth is, how are you allowing your EL teacher to schedule your students effectively? Are you providing them with credited classes? Are you providing them with daily consistent times to meet? Are they pushing in? Are they pulling out? What does that look like? Are you grouping those students based on age and proficiency levels so that that EL teacher can have the most success when she's with them?
It's interesting because a lot of this looks similar to what I would have asked for when I taught special education. Right. Especially, yeah, have a good space and then that clarity on curriculum and the time to collaborate. Right. And if we are wise and structure that collaboration time and have clear outcomes, that time just can be such a great investment. So I was going to ask you, for administrators that are maybe in under-resourced rural environments, where this was a lot and this sounds like great stuff, but if I'm very under-resourced and I'm wearing 25 gazillion hats, it sounds daunting. And so I was going to ask you, where do we start? But I think you can give me feedback on this. Number one, it is really flipping that mindset of looking at my kids not through a deficit lens, but through an asset lens. We're expanding their opportunities. And then the other thing, it seems to me, is really thinking about my EL teachers and beginning there. They're already in my building. So do they have adequate spaces? Am I supporting them in getting the right curriculum? Are we creating that time to collaborate? Am I collaborating with them, right? Am I having the conversations, or are they just that person that comes in and does this thing and then they leave? So I think that's a place to start. Flip how you view things and then start listening to your EL teacher, building that relationship, making sure that you understand them and their skill sets, and then start working through those four things of classroom space, curriculum, collaboration, and scheduling of students. So I think that's where I would begin. What did I miss anything? Are we good if I'm just
no,
starting out?
I think that's a great place to begin. I mean, the overall message is that I come from Philadelphia, which I lovingly say is sometimes the fastest speaking, most impatient part of the country. And so when you meet an English learner for the first time, flip the script. So instead of looking at that student and family and saying, I want English right now, flip that script to look at them and go, you're learning English? Wow. And with that mentality in mind, it will motivate you to do many of the things that you just said.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. Let's wrap this up, Andrea. What part of your own leadership are you still trying to get better at?
You know, I'm currently, I mentioned earlier in our talk today, in some coursework right now. And in my leadership, I wanted to learn more about social emotional tools that exist for students across the country that are really struggling in our schools. And so I'm learning myself. I mean, we're always learning, right? We're educators, we're always learning. But being intentional about my learning is the part of my leadership I'm currently working on in gaining some more tools for my toolbox.
And if listeners could take just one thing away from today's show, what would it be?
Oh, you know, I think it would probably have to go back to, lack of language never equals lack of intelligence.
Okay. Andrea, where can people learn more about the work that you're doing?
So there are a couple places you can find me. We do have a website. It's andreabittnerbooks.com, and that's where you can learn more about how we're helping schools across the country. I get the honor to not only continue to teach, but at the same time to travel the country helping teachers and administrators and students with how to best reach, teach, and confidently communicate with our English learners and families. So that website is a great starting point. You can also find me on LinkedIn, or on what they call it now, Twitter, I guess, on Twitter as well. So reach out to me anytime. I'd be happy to brainstorm more with you.
Awesome. Andrea, thanks for coming on to the show. This has been a great discussion.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Leadership is a journey, and thank you for choosing to walk some of this magical path with me. You can find links to all sorts of stuff in the show notes, including my website, frederickbuskey.com. I love hearing from you, so consider emailing me at frederick@frederickbuskey.com or connecting with me on LinkedIn. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. It does help other listeners find the show. Have a great rest of the week. Be present for others, and more importantly, take time to reflect and recover so you can continue to live and lead better. Cheers.